This is Viv Sutherland, and welcome to Women's Studies. I bring you a guest who I have been wanting to have on the program for a long time. Robin Morgan is probably best known as the author of a book of poems called Monster. She has a new book which will be coming out hopefully in the fall of 76, which will also be published by Random House, as was Monster. It's going to be called Lady of the Beasts. And for the next hour or so, she is going to be reading one poem from this book. Robin, do you want to say a few words about it?
Yeah, Viv, I would. The poem I'm going to read is called The Network of the Imaginary Mother. And it's one five-part poem.
Mm-hmm.
It consists of five individual poems, each of which are related to the other by refrains and themes, which begins to become obvious. And the first is called The Mother, strange love poem to my mother, a love-hate poem. The second is called The Consort, which is a strange love poem to my husband. The third is called The Sister, which is a strange love poem to the woman in my life. The fourth is called The Child, which is a strange love poem to my child. And the fifth is called The Self, and that is a strange love poem to my very self, which is why I say that there's something in this poem to offend pretty much everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But more seriously, there are specific themes which come to the fore in it, one of which is the struggle women in particular have mounted to overcome that feeling of flesh loathing which has been inflicted on us by the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Another is the struggle to affirm what is a very complex identification that we have with our mothers, and a very ambivalent one.
Mm-hmm.
Which we often act out with each other as peers, as feminists, as sisters. A third is, I think, a refusal to simplify, but a kind of statement that personally I want to be seen and to see myself in all of my parts and as the sum of my parts, and not have to hide any one of those parts in any closet for any reason any longer. And I want every woman to be able to do that. And I think the last and perhaps the most important is that the poem is really a metaphysical poem about the search for transcendence. I don't mean that in the sense of a superficial search for what Mary Daly has called cheap grace or short-circuited transcendence, or running after a guru, but rather that very complicated and intricate and difficult existential search that women in particular are engaging in right now, mm-hmm. not only how we relate to each other, to our culture, to the society, to the globe, but in fact to the cosmos. And so in the self poem, in the last, the speaker finally drops away, and the voice of the goddess speaks forth clearly at the end of the poem. So that's about as much as I think I should say. The poem ought to say the rest.
Be my guest.
Thank you. The Network of the Imaginary Mother. 1. The Mother. "There is nothing you cannot be," she said crossly, "if you want to be it enough." Mama, all her unfinished poems glued amber on pages embrittled in notebook reliquaries. Mama, who came a virgin to the man she loved, who lay with him through nights when the yellow star, his Dachau constellation, glowed again in all his dreams. Mama, who waxed with me the bastard daughter he had offered to acknowledge if it were a son. Mama, who fought for my life inside her womb as he had fought for his outside the ovens, who threatened to disbelieve him Jew, to call him Nazi, unless he granted me his name, and when he did, refused it, choosing her own and mine instead, from that of Merlin's old arch-enemy, witch queen, sorceress. Now she stood scrying for me whole worlds of what no one could stop me from becoming. Art, music, science, wealth, influence, fame, each threaded hook tugging at my child's excitement as we fed the ducks in Bronxville Pond and watched our bread sink upon their waters. A propitiation to the water lily's soot-gray petals. She loved Blake's etchings then, and Kafka's tales, the Appassionata and Lao Tzu's mysteries. And I was her miracle, her lever, her weapon, the shuttle of her loom. I didn't mind that until later, didn't suffocate within it yet, but loved instead the very smell of her terrycloth bathrobe, comforting myself with its odor of her when she had to work late at the lingerie counter and my aunt put me to bed before Mama returned. And this is the fragrance, almost forgotten, that warms the deepest dreams of us all. Even the large male children who grow to fear or conquer or imitate its power. Even the large female children who find ourselves rocking each other or men, or babies. We, the living totems of that rhythmic breast that rocked us, and which we have become, yet long for still. Her power, when did I begin to sense its origins? When did I embrace my disgust at this gross world, her fat body, my own flesh? Was it there with the first contraction, when my outraged head thudded stubborn against her pelvis, turning itself aside again, again in my refusal to leave her? Or when, after being dragged alive into a sick yellow dawn by double forceps, this matter and energy of me, unreconciled, met in the initial skirmish of a battle to the death, convulsions jerking the puppet baby every 4 hours for the first 2 days. By the age of 10, I felt stayed in the corset of my ribs, basted to my spine, sausaged into my skin. A few years after, I would write about Icarus, the shed husk lies upon the ground, and one is free. Still later, I read Teilhard de Chardin, and wept with lust for deliverance into spirit, light, soul, intellect. This blood was not of my making. These breasts were not of my willing. There is nothing you cannot be if you want it enough. She had lied more than once. I felt her watch me with a superfluity of eyes, reach for me with 8 arms, spidery as an Eastern goddess. She seemed to sit at the center of my life, secreting my future, dividing herself into 2 half-bodies, one of which was meant for me. I fought her architecture, her manipulations, calling her three-faced, thinking her common, though organic, and certainly original. And all these cycles later, all the scenes and silent intervals and tears, what is left between us? That blood was my own. Those breasts were all I knew. They hang empty now. All her pulp sags, jaundiced, flaccid, rippling from her palsied limbs. What is intolerable here is the voice of a 3-year-old child in me who cries that with this death the world is ending. Age unlimited, the wreckers are tearing down my first home. Paid by the hour, they take their time. Where Blake and Lao Tzu once mused, unreformed rabbis rave now in her brain's asylum. Doctors incise, lawyers unravel her frenzied weaving of lawsuits, wills, stock market deals. She disowns all her transformations. She wants to make a killing before she dies. How can she recognize my real inheritance? That I became an heiress long ago of her indifference to the celebration of her own body, or another woman's, or a man's. This, her means of enduring. The lesson passed to me, the knot untangled still by 30 years of patience, by 3 decades of courage still uncut. Not that this is all she gave me, although the Matra heritage left her impoverished. She shuffles at each curb, shifting her feet while her forehead breaks out in rhinestones of sweat. She cannot estimate how deep the step is. Her whole body tremors with Parkinson's lascivious dibbuk, as if her torso were a giant heart, pumping its spasms along attendant arteries, her puppet limbs. She is too strong to die of this, though, a mere degenerative disease. She will be murdered by attack when one day, quite soon now, a small arteriosclerotic organ the size of her clenched fist, unnourished by the living current beating hopeless in blocked passageways, unable to release all that congested, shameless, scarlet love for its own body, when one day this heart, her actual heart, implodes. Meanwhile, she is afraid to read my poems, that best of me I offer her, afraid she will not understand them, or afraid she will. She waits alone with still more Yahrzeit candles each Yom Kippur, alone, and I, intransigent in my own fierce survival, knowing at last her way is not my way. But there must be some honor, even in survival. So when she fell and lay 6 hours unable to reach the phone, and then was sped to the hospital where we, yes, they and I, fought for weeks to break her will in order to save her life, and when she returned, a barren invalid, to her apartment's clutter, the lure of my blood was there before me. Helpless, I waded back upstream to where I had been born to give her birth this time. Brutal as she, after all. Merciless, bullying the medication into her decrescent body, learning at last and bitterly and utterly, the life comes first. There is no spirit without the form. And this is the knowledge, almost remembered, that chills the deepest nightmares of us all. The grown male children who fear the wheel is turned by Kali's dancing. The grown female children who lose ourselves, complacent, to only one of the three aspects, virgin, mother, crone, and then deny the numinous presence of the other two in any woman, in terror of what we are becoming, yet long for still. Vile. This is vile. This is the mystery from which my inmost flesh revulsion springs. This loathing now, to kneel between these massive thighs, squatting in pain, to bear this bedpan like a chalice for the dregs of her life's untold hagiography, to lie such set responses of encouragement and comfort. Here is the truth I flee from in my own body. The cosmic wit of each cell's purulence, this stench of death and urine, this bulging pubis flecked with matted hair. Here are your gates of eternity, your pit, your trap door, your fissure in the earth before which the priestess sways. Here is the lair of taboo, the grove of ritual. Here I was born. I am up to my elbows in filth, inescapably undead. There is no cleansing from this. There is only rage and the instinct older than love that thrusts my arms in deeper, grasping the life that is her, is myself, the spirit raining pus for iridescence, the infection of being alive, which I shall never again disclaim. Mama, I will be with you when you die. Repeat the syllables until the lesson is drummed along the arteries. Margaret Jones, midwife, hanged, 1648. Joan Peterson, veterinarian, hanged, 1652. Isabel Inch Taylor, herbalist, burned, 1618. Mother Lakeland, healer, burned, 1645. What have they done to you? Two. The Consort. Say what you will, there is this man. Correct or incorrect, father figure, faggot, fool, or any other pat conclusion you assume, be damned. There is this man. I, who hate the class of men, have loved this man for almost half my life. Nothing, not even him, will stop me now. Certain things are understood between us. Yes, I was 17 and suicidal and a poet. Yes, he was 10 years older, suicidal and a poet. We may be suicidal, but we're hardly self-destructive. It was the bond of poetry no one could comprehend, that what his mind contained appeared to me as an interior castle, its crystal terraced, radiant through the body I desired and feared. The litanies of struggle, of despair, I've intoned elsewhere, and doubtless will again. Once to have said such things was thought unspeakable. Unfashionable now to sing, radiant, you see, spirit in matter, pulsant with energy, the word made flesh. Say what you will, I was not wrong. This is now the 13th year since I came virgin to him, to the one man I have loved. Since I first lay with him through nights when all his lovers haunted our dream streets, mocking their maleness and his, averting their eyes from me, his transgression, his sin, my body the glowing sign of his desertion from their numbers. This is the 13th year since that cheap votive candle stuttered its light on the bedsheet where my ritual blood pooled like wax for the signet of our embrace. See, these are the poems we tore from one another. These are the scars. The stitches have been absorbed. At first, I knew only his power. At first, he set his seal upon me. At first, he could not have known my power or understood the misuse of his own. At first, we were drawn solely by what we would become. But this is the 13th year, and we are drawn by what we have always been, always, before breath, poems, dreams could inhabit us. Now is my seal set upon him, as it was in the beginning, when we foamed up from my imagination, infinite, and exploded into our innumerable selves. Here is your matter and energy, your electrons and protons. Here is my ecstatic whim, primordial, the DNA pattern pearled light speed from my needles, the immaculate, violent ordure of this cauldron from which all entities crawl, the insouciant earthworm, the magi clam who divides herself, experiments with making that part of her macro-organismic possibility, male, the complement, the consort, the curious, delightful novelty of him. He approaches his tryst, the anthropodiacal lover. Eager to please, he proudly tiptoes eight-legged toward me on the surface of the waters. He offers food. If I accept the gift, his courtship may begin. Eager to amuse, he jumps in his excitement, waving gaudy striped legs, hopping in self-congratulation at having found me. Eager to arouse, he sidles in a cunning rhythm near where I may observe him. He pantomimes how he would wrap me loosely in a special mating canopy of silk. Spinning, I cast down my drag line for his ascent. I disown none of my transformations. And ever since, leisurely, Through all the 13 Orphic eternities, we have been quickening toward each other in this saraband, exchanging languidities with our llama eyes, keening a seaweed counterpoint in our great blue whale voices across the ocean's amphitheaters. His electric maned head suddenly lifted, nostrils flaring to catch the lioness scent of me, whole deserts distant. I, centripetaling down my ladder of air, drawn by the beacon fire his feathers spread for me in a strutting audition. Such phosphorescent greens and violets, salt mellow on our tongues from tasting each other's skin and tears. Ever since, a floating through sameness and difference, poems like sparks of laughter struck from the flint of our diversionary griefs. This is possible. I have said so. He has feared I divide myself, divide him, mind and body, spirit and flesh, the cosmic and the daily. As if I could settle for nothing. I say to him, yes, there are certain reasons I have done this, among them choicelessness. As if the center of my life were knotted up into a hub of memory, itself unspeakable, from which is spoken all that moves me. I say to him that such a clot will never be dissolved except along paths radiating order, which only then can be ignored, as each spoke must be balanced with precision on a wheel, in preparation merely to blur invisible once the wheel spins. The means and goal must justify each other. For how many millennia must the river sculpt the canyon? How opaque must the winter sleep become before the northern lights will visit the eye? I say to him, why have I called you mother in my dreams? And this is the question, almost unwhispered, that wakens the riddled nights of us all, the grown male children who dare not yet answer what the grown female children yet dare not ask. Where is the reason for loving? Who risked inventing it? How large must we grow before giving birth to each other, a labor we fear to begin each dawn, yet long for still? I affirm all of my transformations. For this is the 13th year, and I am come into my power. I say to him, there is a place beyond our struggle where I will take us, beyond the archetypal, the animal, even the human, beyond all we have been so far. It will exist. See, I am creating it now. You are utterly given over unto me, and I will make of you the beloved. I will call sacred antlers up from your brow and place pipes against your lips. Your haunches are mine, your sly buttocks, your body disarrayed of all but my arms' garlands, your brain encelled with my brain, double lotus. Before your Osirian trance will I unveil myself. You shall be again the luminous bridegroom all my suffering foresaw, upon whose groin I placed my palm to consecrate the light that streamed from all your prophecies. We shall never be finished. I name you husbandman. I say, there is this man. I claim him. Blessed be, it is he I have chosen. Repeat the syllables until the lesson is pumped through the heart. Nikriven, accused of lasciviousness, burned 1569. Barbara Goebel, described by her jailers as the fairest maid in Würzburg, burned 1629, age 19. Frau Peller, raped by Inquisition torturers because her sister refused the witch judge Franz Burman, 1631. Maria Wolberger Rung, tried at a secular court in Mannheim as a witch, released as merely a prostitute, accused again by the Episcopal court at Eichstätt, tortured into confession and then burned alive, 1723, age 22. What have they done to me? Three, the sister. There are these women's faces, a montage of features so like my own, though darker or older or thinner or sweeter. They have names each and unique, identical secrets. Lady of the sorrows, lady of the plants, lady of the scales. These are my people. The lattice of my spine shudders with such a weight. There are these women's faces, various as dew prints sequined across my life's web, every grain reflecting a different dawn. The interlace of all my years shudders with such a weight until each pod of moisture bursts, flooding toward the center, that hub of memory, itself unspeakable, from which is spoken all that moves us. There is this woman's face, she for whom I have spun out of myself whole networks of survival, each with the one weapon the other most needed at that moment.